Well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us. Stan Turner, your host here in the chair, keeping warm today. My goodness, we got spoiled, didn't we, in the last few days? Now we're back to where I guess we usually are this time of year with this cool stuff. One day nice, next couple. What a kind of one step forward, three backward, but that's spring in Minnesota. But it's hard to believe. Just 1 week ago today, driving to the station, going through lots of ice ruts and snow. Yeah, it was only a week ago, right after that big dumping of snow. We hope it's the last for the season. We've suffered enough, haven't we? Thank you again for your company today. We always try to make this an hour worth your time, worth your while, and I'm quite confident because of our guest that we'll be able to deliver on that promise again today. Kyle, how you doing? My friend Kyle over there running the show from the control room. Everything good with you?
Oh, yeah, I can't complain.
Sitting in a T-shirt.
It is a T-shirt.
And your cap is finally off, a sure sign that spring.
I was trying to wait a little bit, but yeah, I had to pull it out.
We got to push.
A little too warm.
We got to push. It is, yeah. The furnace is really roaring in here today, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I may break a sweat before this is all over, but then I usually do. Folks, let's see. We heard the temperature. It's, what do we have here? 48 degrees, actually, by one measure, and we may top out today around 64 degrees, so I'll believe that when I feel it. Let's get moving with the show right now. Let's talk Duluth. Yes, that city on the big waters up in northeastern Minnesota. Just say the name, Duluth, and all kinds of things come to mind. What do you think about Duluth, Kyle? Been up there?
Yeah, I go up there a couple of times a year.
Yeah. What do you like about it?
I like the cold weather.
It's always
cooler down there.
Really? Like the cold weather? Coming off a winter and you're saying you like the cold weather.
Okay. I know.
It's air-conditioned in summertime, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
When it's hot down here. Okay, well, that's fair. Well, okay, say the name Duluth. All kinds of things come to mind, as I say. The head of the lakes, of course, the Great Lakes, with those ocean-going vessels slipping into and out of Duluth Harbor under that beautiful aerial bridge. Some call Duluth the Zenith City, a city that's home to Grandma's Marathon, the tall ships that come in. That view that takes your breath away as you approach the city from Thompson Hill, you know, the one gazing down on that splendid vista of harbors and bridges and the majestic Lake Superior. But some people see Duluth other ways. One detractor said the coldest winter he ever spent was a summer in Duluth. Others say it's not the end of the world, but you can see it from there. And somebody said that boasting that you are mayor of Duluth is like saying you are the world's tallest short person. So what's your take on Duluth? Me, I like the place. I really do. I'm unabashed in liking it. I like it a lot. It has a pull on me. A lot of it has to do, of course, with Lake Superior, our great unsalted sea with those big ships I mentioned, the Lakers and the Salties, as they're called, that make the place a world away from what most of us experience most days where we live right here. Maybe the best way to see the city of Duluth is through the eyes of a native son or a native daughter. We have one of those sons in the studio with us this noon. Michael Fido is a well-known and well-respected writer and observer who knows lots about his home port. Michael has a new collection of his writings, musings about Duluth. It's called Zenith City, Stories from Duluth. And Michael Fido, I have long been a fan of your writing, and it's such a delight to finally meet you, in fact, get you in the studio right here so we can have a chat.
Well, thank you very much, Stan. It's great to be here.
Right. You don't live in the Port City anymore, do you?
Not anymore.
It's been a long time.
I left Duluth to go to graduate school back in 1964, and have not lived there since. I had family there for a number of years, and so would be visiting them regularly.
So you didn't go running and screaming from the city, I gotta get out of here, huh? No?
Well, no, not quite. But there were times when I thought that, particularly when I was a kid, and our baseball games would get canceled because of snow.
What month?
Well, May.
I've seen snowflakes in June in Duluth. I really have. Didn't pile up, but they're there. You know they're there. Okay, so I get that. Well, your latest collection, this is a great collection of stories. Memoirs, observations. It's a little of everything, and it's all good. It's kind of part memoir, part love letter in some cases, part psychoanalysis of the city. You know, call it what you will. Michael Fido, if Duluth were a person, what would that person's characteristics be like?
Well, probably would be very stoic, middle-aged. Okay. Kind of a perpetual middle age.
Even when it's young.
Oh, yeah, exactly, sure.
Yeah.
You know, okay. That's kind of how I get it.
Right.
slow to laugh.
Slow to laugh.
And that may be from the German and Scandinavian culture, which dominates.
Right, right. Don't want to shine too much. In fact, one of your chapters, don't let the shine show, something like that.
Thou shalt not shine.
Thou shalt not shine. No, don't stand out, for Pete's sake. Don't call attention to yourself.
Exactly.
So if Duluth were a person, we couldn't call her or him exciting, could we?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Yeah. It's an apt observation. I think that isn't that. Although there are moments of great excitement.
There are.
But as a character, the community.
What are its best qualities? If it were a person, what would you say? Is it welcoming? Is it friendly? Is it honest and open?
I think all of the above. Okay. I think it is all of that. At least it was during my period of residency there, the which I call in the book the formative first quarter century of my life.
The story of Duluth, we're not going to belabor the history because we want to tell you people's stories. This is your book is a marvelous piece of storytelling, Michael, and
thank you.
And it goes beyond, or certainly before, some very fine books that have been written about Duluth. Cold Comfort by Barton Sutter.
Very good.
Barton was the poet laureate of Duluth. Huh?
Deservedly so.
Okay.
Very good.
And he kind of spends his book comparing Duluth and Superior. He calls right across the bay there. He calls Superior, despite its name, a broken city where old ore boats go to die. That may sum it up. It's kind of a grim landscape over there in some places. It's a shame, too. And then Laurie Herzl, who is from Duluth as well, she is now books editor at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. She had a book out a couple of years ago called News to Me, Adventures of a Accidental Journalist, and she talks about growing up in Duluth, too. It's a good read, isn't it?
It is. I've read both Bart's book and Laurie's.
And it does, I think it tends to draw people up there to take a look anyway, if certainly not move there. Yeah. The current mayor, Don Ness, wants people to move there, and I think the city is taking steps to make it even more attractive. But its beginnings, Michael, let's see, back just after the American Civil War, there were about 100,000 people in that city. That was about it. And then suddenly there was a huge explosion of population and a promise that Duluth was going to be bigger than Chicago maybe in a few years.
Yes, that
happened. Last time I checked, it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. And I remember at the time when the talk of the St. Lawrence Seaway was opening, during a lot of the activities there, as a college student, I was a volunteer chauffeur for people, for VIPs coming in and out of the city. And all of them thought, this is the place to be. This city is really going to take off. And I was 19, I think, at the time, and I think, where is this going to happen? And
what are you seeing? I don't.
Yeah, I could have been a pundit at that time because I thought, what's going to happen is if there are going to be jobs for a few longshoremen, and that's precisely what happened.
That's what happened. That was about it. The big seaway. Well, the city is amazing. It at one point, I think, the turn of the 20th century, Duluth had more millionaires per capita, percentage of population than any other country in the city, any city in the country, including the big ones, L.A., New York, and the rest. So that was amazing in itself, and you can see vestiges of that great wealth out in what they call the East End.
Yes, indeed.
The Congdon Mansion, those places.
A lot of that was lumber money.
Right.
And I think most people might have thought it was mining money, but and there was some of that, but most of that came from lumber.
So the great, depression, or there was some horrible thing that came along economically about 1870 or so.
In the 1890s, right. Maybe, I think. I think there was one then, too,
'90s, too. In any case, the promise of another Chicago up there at the head of the lakes never came to pass. Interesting figures from the past. We'll just touch on these briefly. This guy named Daniel Gracelin Sieur de Lute, who gave his name to the city. He was a French military guy who's a canoe. Came ashore, Park Point, as we know it today.
Yes.
And I guess a fairly decent guy, maybe led the way for fur traders and all the rest.
But all of that.
Yeah.
All of that.
And, then there was another guy named Jay Cook. There's a state park named after him. And Jay was not the world's nicest guy.
He was one of the robber barons. And but what I note in the book, what was interesting to me, going back over this, is that immediately, there's for all of my life, there's been the statue of Jay Cook down in front of
Leif Erickson. Oh, I've seen it many times. Yeah. You can't miss it.
It's there.
It's right near the Leif Erickson Park, and it's a beautiful part of the city, right on the water there almost.
And then you've got the guy, Duluth, who's the discoverer or the first European to land. And there's no commemoration of him until the 1960s. And that particular statue is not included on any visitors' sites. I like the description. The statue is on the UMD campus, University of Minnesota Duluth campus. One of the student handbooks described him as a Michelin man missing his yo-yo.
Rodin was going to be assigned to do the sculpture, but somehow Rodin died before that could happen. They had raised some money, and so some guy from a Salvation Army place wound up doing it, I guess. But it's not.
Well, it was actually Jacques Lipschitz, who's a noted sculptor, but this one, lots of people after the fact thought, you know. He just kind of did this in his spare time.
Well, for starters, nobody had an image, a picture, a drawing, or a painting of what this guy, Sir Duluth, looked like. So it's pretty hard to do a sculpture.
When you kind of look at it, you know, up close, he could be Cyrano de Bergerac. He's a long nose.
Long nose, yeah. Okay. Well, so, fun. In any case, the robber baron gets the prominent statue sitting in the area, sitting with his dog right by Leif Erickson Park, by the Kitchigami Club there across the street. So he gets all the glory. Crime pays, Michael, sometimes, huh? I guess so.
It seemed to have then.
Right. 12:17 in the Twin Cities right now, 48 degrees, cloudy skies, going to be kind of yucky this weekend. We're having fun, though, talking about Zenith City, Stories from Duluth, a new book, a collection of observances, musings, essays by Michael Fido, our guest, a man who is of Duluth and has many great stories to tell. Michael, I had the pleasure of covering the city of St. Paul for Channel 5 KSTP for many years. And see, people often, it's not a twin city of Minneapolis at all. It's different. It's its own person. It is, in a sense, a city of character and characters. And you found many a character in Duluth, and you've written about some of them here. You went to school with some of them.
Yes.
Your father had a grazing relationship with some of them, even on the low end of the moral scale.
He did.
And kind of fun. But let's talk about one of your schoolmates, and a guy named who went on to big things, maybe the most famous guy you've never heard of, but you've heard his voice, and we're talking of Don LaFontaine, right?
Yes, Don. Don, I met him. He was a year behind me in high school, and there was another friend of mine who had a minor Hollywood career before his untimely death, and Raymond Kark was his professional name. Mm-hmm. He and I used to put skits together for some of the assemblies. And this kid, Don LaFontaine, would pester us to put him on the stage. He wanted to, you know.
Give me a part. Give me a something.
Oh, he was always badgering us. And finally, we did give him a part, which he was happy to take. And it was a non-speaking part. And
there's irony, folks. There's irony in this.
He, and he was, you know, he was fine at that. It was, he loved it. And he wanted to do more. And so the next time a non-speaking role came up, we gave it to him because he would be willing to do it. And you know, he was a nice kid, but I would never have predicted in a thousand years what wound up happening with him.
What wound up happening with Don LaFontaine?
Well, Don, your audience would recognize all the film trailers that would begin with "In a World of," that was Don.
In a World, yeah.
And he did them for 30 some years until his own untimely passing. Mm-hmm. But there. You know,
the voice of God is what
the voice of God. Thunderthroat.
Right. Thunderthroat. He was the voice you heard when you were at the movie house looking at the trailers. The
upcoming he did about 5,000 of them, I guess, over the years. And you know, here the only thing we would let him do was non-speaking stuff.
He must have thanked you later in life, huh, in his own way. Kyle, we have pulled a bit of sound of Don LaFontaine. He was, I think, being debriefed about his career by somebody. And he recalled how he was a bit of a scamp in high school, always a jokester and all the rest. Let's listen to his voice here.
Cut up in class. And when I went to school the next day, I didn't want to talk. And the teacher got bugged about it. She said, "Why aren't you saying something?" And I said, "What do you want me to say?" And I was sent to the office because she thought I was screwing with her. And for a while there was, it really upset me, but then I discovered that I could be everybody's dad. Jimmy can't come to school today because he's not feeling very well. The minute he...
Thank you, Don. The voice of God right out of Duluth Central High School.
That's
you.
I don't remember that voice.
That voice.
Because we wouldn't let him use it.
Great judge of talent there, Michael Vito. There are many more characters that populate your life and your book here. Michael Fido, author of Zenith City Stories from Duluth. We got some great ones for you, just like that one we just told you. A lot of fun here. There are some down, dark moments in the book, too, that need to be talked about. We'll get to those. Let's take a break here. Michael Fido with us here in studio talking about Duluth. Stay with us. We'll be right back. To really experience a book, meet the author. I'm Stan Turner for Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Every month, Valley Bookseller's calendar is loaded with events featuring both local and national authors. Visit valleybookseller.com and click the events calendar for a complete list. Choose from monthly events like the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour or special presentations with authors on tour. Meet your favorite author at Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater.
At Jaime's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Jaime's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul, online at Jaime's.com.
Are you ready to upgrade your travel experience? Travel with Landmark Tours. They're a local, family-owned tour operator. Landmark Tours has been serving Minnesota travelers for nearly a quarter century, providing quality air motor coach vacations to destinations across North America. They provide a level of value of inclusiveness not found with other tour operators. Each Landmark Tour package includes round-trip airfare, quality accommodations, and deluxe motor coach service. But that's not all. Most meals, baggage handling, and services of a professional tour director are included too, along with a trip cancellation and travel insurance protection plan. So sit back and relax. They've done the research. They've taken care of the details. Leave the planning to Landmark Tours. See if you can find one of your bucket list destinations at their website, landmark-tours.com. That's landmark-tours.com. Call 651-490-5408. Landmark Tours. Upgrade your travel experience today.
Well, here we are, Stan Turner with you here, 12:24 on this gray Saturday. Kind of chilly out there, but things will get better as we get into next week. We hope. We're having a good, sunny, fun time here visiting in studio today with Michael Fido. Wonderful writer, a great storyteller, and author of a new collection of his writings called Zenith City. That's the city that we know as Duluth and where Michael Fido grew up, where he was born and grew up. Stories from Duluth it is, and we have some great stories. We just talked about this Don LaFontaine guy, the voice of God who came out of your school, Duluth Central, right?
Yes,
and
indeed.
And went on to become a voice that was virtually heard around the world in the movie theaters. What a great talent the man had, even though you muzzled him in high school. You wouldn't let him talk.
That's
no
right.
Speaking parts. Oh, my, oh, my. So many other characters populate, and we're talking about, let's talk about radio. Let's continue. Growing up, by the way, growing up in Duluth, your father's side of the family, Italian.
Yes.
Italian ancestry. Your mom's side, Swedish German.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What a mashup, huh?
It was. It was.
Right. It had to be interesting.
It was, you know, kind of push me, pull you, sort of
okay.
an existence.
Right. Well, growing up there, I suppose in the 40s, for you, of course, the breakfast table in the morning always had the radio
Mother would listen right. to the programs, and I remember them very well. The one that always, even then, it used to, when I was four, I was struck by this. There was a program called Breakfast in Hollywood with a man named Tom Brenneman, and probably octogenarians in the audience would remember this. But it seemed to me that that every day on his program, he would roam the audience and he would try on ladies' hats.
Wait a minute.
And of course the studio audience would laugh at this, but so would my mother, and the other, you know, and when he would say something like, "Well, ladies, what about this one?" and everybody would laugh, and including my mother, who couldn't see any of this. You know, it was clearly
theater of the mind.
Yeah, it was just that
nonsense.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then there was, of course, Don McNeil's Breakfast Club listened to, and I think she was more interested in that because there were people from Duluth who had played a role there, several singers and and one of the producers.
Right.
And then I always liked to listen to Bob and Ray. And
Wally Ballou here.
Wally Ballou. Wally Ballou is one of my favorites. Winner of 16 Diction Awards, as I recall.
The upcut? E. Ballou here.
Yes,
right?
That's right. Yeah, he would come in. Well, it's wonderfully funny stuff, and I enjoyed it from the time I was maybe in the eighth or ninth grade on. My favorite story of them, and they, you know, you can look at archived. You listen to archived programs of them, and they used to use the general manager of KDAL, a man named KDAL
being a Duluth radio station. And his name?
Was Odin Ramslin. He was the general manager for a good many years. And occasionally, when they were searching for, when Wally Ballou was searching for a character, and Ray Goulding, would come on, and he would be somebody named Odin Ramslin.
Got the name from a Duluth station.
Right, which carried the program. Well, at some point, probably about 1958 or thereabouts, Bob and Ray used to be on daily from 3 to 4 p.m. on the radio station in Duluth. And the station ratings were taking a hit during that time. Rock and roll music was gaining, was ascending rapidly, and the radio station WEBC was playing, had adopted a top 40 format, and Odin Ramslin, seeing what was happening, wanted to make a change, and so he notified CBS that at the end of the contract, or whatever it was, he was going to be dropping Bob and Ray. And on the last program that was to air in Duluth, Wally Ballou was interviewing kind of a klutz. And at the end of the 2 or 3 minute bit, he said, "Well, thank you for talking to us today, sir. And if you would be so kind, please give us your name and where you're from." And the answer was, "I'm Odin Ramslin from Duluth, Minnesota."
Oh, the klutz.
Yeah,
they stuck him at the end there.
And apparently he wasn't very happy about it. But
he wasn't.
But the rest of the station was vastly amused.
Well, many characters, not homegrown characters, have passed through Duluth over the years. We've got to talk about one here. We're never going to have time to get through all the characters you write about in Zenith City. Zenith City, by the way, that was that was the name given to Duluth, wasn't it, by a newspaper owner
publisher in Duluth.
Top of the city there, top of the world, Zenith City, Stories from Duluth by Michael Fido. Well, wouldn't you know that a guy named Joe DiMaggio actually showed up in Duluth once, back in the late 1930s. The what was his nickname, the Great Slugger?
The Yankee Clipper.
The Yankee Clipper, of course, and he took a shine to a young lady, Dorothy Olson, I think was her name, her maiden name, grew up in Duluth, not too far from where you grew up.
She became, of course, Dorothy Arnold. Her middle name was Arnoldine,
right.
And she became Dorothy Arnold and became his first wife.
Well, they met on a movie set, didn't they?
Yes.
Right.
At the conclusion, I think, of the 1939 or 1940 baseball season, DiMaggio was offered a cameo in a film that was being shot in the Bronx, and he took the job. And Dorothy was not a featured player, but she had a role in it, and they wound up having a big romance that was covered in all of the mm-hmm. press, and they were married. And in December, I think it was December of 1941, he paid a visit to Duluth and visited her parents at their home, and he bounced around town a little bit and was given lots of banquets and things for that week. The marriage didn't last more than another year or two, but he was in Duluth. He made comments to the baseball stadium in Duluth, which is now called Wade Stadium. He had some input in how they ought to fix this or that. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, I think many more people saw him or claimed to have seen him than actually did. But
yeah, it's always the way.
Right.
But for a while, a small-town girl or, you know, local girl makes good.
Indeed.
Dorothy Arnold. And he neglected her, basically.
He did.
And once he married her, he caught the fish she was after, then didn't treat her very well, and she bailed out.
She did, after a couple of years. And later, you know, he always apparently thought that they would get together again and remarry. Yeah. That never happened.
Well, along came somebody called Marilyn Monroe. Yes. And that took care of that, huh?
It did.
As a young aspiring journalist, maybe you didn't even know you were aspiring to be a journalist at the time, but a guy named Louis Armstrong came through Duluth.
He did, I had a chance to interview him. I was at that time in the ninth grade at Washington Junior High School, and Louis Armstrong and his All-Stars, that was the name of the band, were headlining at the Duluth Home Show. I would guess that thing used to run in either the late February or early March. And I went, and was told by the junior high school band director that we would get extra credit if we went. And so I might have gone anyway, but mm-hmm. there I was. Mm-hmm. And when he finished playing, I thought, well, I'll see if I can get an autograph.
Wow.
And I went backstage. It looked like I couldn't get there. I mean, it looked like people were blocking. But somehow, a couple of the ushers or whoever they were seemed to be, their attention wandered to something else. I think they were wandered to maybe the juggler's assistants, who were scantily clad women.
that would do it. They were distracted.
They were distracted.
And you got through security.
And I got through and stood. I was afraid to. I could see him sitting behind
Satchmo, Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong.
Wow.
And he was wearing slippers. He had a tam on his head. He had a scarf around his neck. And he was clipping stories from newspapers, and these stories had to do with his reviews that he had gotten in the movie The Glenn Miller Story. He was clipping these, and I didn't want to interrupt.
Yep, yep.
And somebody else came by and said, "Do you want to see the boss?" And I said, "Yeah, well, you know, yes." He said, "Oh, sure, he'll see you. Go on in." And he said that here's a fellow who wants your autograph, and Armstrong said he would sign. Somehow something prescient. I had written on the top of this page an interview with Louis Armstrong, but I already by this time I knew I wasn't going to do that. I was just.
But the word interview was up there, and he sees this,
and he saw that. Yeah. And he said, "Oh," he said, "are you a writer?"
14.
Yeah, and I said, "Well, you know, mumbled around," and he said, "What paper are you with?" I said, "The Bugle, the school paper." And he said, "Sure, okay, so, you know, what do you want to know?" I didn't know what I wanted to know. And so he was very, very sweet man.
Yes.
He said, and I just said, "How long have you been playing the trumpet?"
Yeah, good question.
Which he sure. took it from there, and sure. Must have given me 10 minutes.
Right.
And and then at the end of the time, he said, "Now, you be sure and send me a copy of the story."
Isn't that amazing?
And I didn't do it. And I didn't do it because the advisor to the school paper, when I wrote the story, said that a story about a, and she, and I will kind of emphasize, jazz musician.
Derisively, a jazz musician.
Has no place in the school paper.
No place in the school paper.
So that,
you would have written it, but they didn't want it.
They didn't want it.
Because it was Louis Armstrong, a jazz musician. Performer, musician. Oh, this happened to you again with a not a well-known person, but a person who was important to you named Broxy.
Yes.
This man happened to be black. He was part of an audition you were part of for a radio job or something.
Well, like yes. He was, I was 18 years old, a freshman at University of Minnesota Duluth, and there was some posting about the campus radio station. Now, KUMD is now a professional station, but at that time it was a more or less a closed-circuit AM station for students to run. And there was an audition, and I went. And at that audition, I met Broxy, who at the time I thought may have been a faculty advisor. He was in his late 30s, but he was also a freshman.
Okay.
And he was... Well, to make a long story short, I learned a great deal about him. He had grown up around jazz musicians and had been a band boy for Count Basie, when he was a kid, and he kind of took an interest in me, and in part I think because I had a car. And he didn't drive, but that was okay.
All right.
I never felt taken advantage of because he had a lot to offer me, and he would take me to some jazz concerts, and he knew all of these people. It was amazing, and of course it was from his association with Count Basie.
Oh,
and he also had a program on the radio station. He was wonderful. He knew so much about.
He was a natural on the air.
Absolute natural. And he knew all of these people, and he had these anecdotes to share about them, and it was just wonderful. And after my freshman year, which I probably spent too much time at the radio station, thinking that that was going to be a calling, it turned out not to be, but I spent more time there, missed classes, and was not doing well academically. And enlisted in the Air National Guard while I was gone for the period of training time. I would send Broxy some letters, and he would reply every once in a while. And then one time I sent a letter, and it came back, no forwarding address. I never heard from him again. Later, many years later, probably 30 years after, there was received a questionnaire from a place where Kent State, where I went to graduate school, and they wanted to know, you know, who made an impact on your life. We're going to assemble this, and I thought about it and thought about it, and I thought about Broxy off and on over for many years, and I wrote this piece about him, a short little essay, how he had impacted my life, and that also was turned down because they wanted me to have written about a professor at the college, and I didn't,
Michael. Currently no value in these people because they don't have an academic degree.
Right.
Is that it?
Right.
That's amazing. Oh, my, oh, my. Let's see. We're going to take one more break here, Michael. We've got so much ground to cover yet. We could do 3 hours here because there are so many fascinating stories between the covers of your new book, your collection of your remembrances of Duluth, Zenith City Stories from Duluth. Michael Fido, our guest here. Great storyteller. We'll be right back. At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
At Jaime's Haberdashery, men never sacrifice fashion for weather. So no matter how cold it gets, you can still spot a Jaime's man by his impeccable taste and the confidence that only comes from a hot lather shave. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Create a look that's uniquely yours with tailored suits, overcoats, hats, and accessories that make winter blush and at prices that won't melt your wallet. Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
Here's Dr. Rose Perpich from Stillwater Family Dental. What happens during my first appointment?
The first visit as a new patient at Stillwater Family Dental, we have you come in and we always do a full set of x-rays. And like I said, digital x-rays are low radiation, and so we have those available. Then we also do a full set of photographs. So the first appointment, we do a lot of records. We take x-rays, do photos. Sometimes people get their teeth cleaned that day, or if they have other more major concerns, they may come back and we'll have a consultation and go over everything before anything's done.
Stillwater Family Dental, dentistry for the whole family.
This is Lindsay with All Exteriors and K-Guard Gutters. We're a family-owned and operated business with more than 20 years of construction experience. From decks to roofs and siding to gutters, we have the experience to do the job right the first time. Visit allexteriorswi.com. All exteriors, all quality, all the time.
KLBB. Where your music, you ain't nothing but a hound dog, and memories,
ghost riders in the sky,
live.
We are back here, Stan Turner with you, 1241 right now, 48 degrees in the Twin Cities. Marvelous guest with us, wanting to meet this guy for many years. Michael Fido is with us. Michael, thank you. Telling us all about Duluth, where he was born and grew up. Michael, a well-known writer, stringer for the New York Times. He's done work for the Christian Science Monitor, author of many books, not just the one we're talking about, but The Lynchings in Duluth. We'll get to that here in just a minute. Also a book called The Man from Lake Wobegon. Michael, how about that one?
Well,
huh?
Yes.
Who would that be?
Well, yeah. Give you three guesses.
Yeah, I think so. Right. Anyway, lots of good writing from your pen, and thank you so much for being with us.
Well, you're welcome.
It's fun going through your book here. It's various and sundry topics. Sinclair Lewis, for Pete's sake, he lived in Duluth for a while, back during World War II,
yes,
I think.
He did.
Well, he was a curmudgeonly guy. You know, he wrote well, but he was kind of a nasty guy. Dorothy Thompson, his former wife, could attest to that.
Kind of a sourpuss, I guess you'd call him.
What do you think of Duluth?
Well, I met back in 1970, I met a man named Ben Du Bois, who was the founder of the Independent Bankers Association in the United States. And Ben himself was an enormously interesting man, but he was born the same year as Lewis, and he was the only one left in Sauk Center in 1970 who knew Lewis as a boy. And I went to see Ben. One of the first things this guy, who is a banker all of his life, said to me was, I once cast a presidential vote for Eugene Debs, who was a socialist. And you just can't marry a banker with a socialist, but that's this guy, Ben, darn, who was an interesting man. And he thought that Lewis didn't like Duluth. In fact, he did rather like it. He loved the physical lay of the city. He was very taken with that. And he did some research for a novel, and he wrote Cass Timberlane, which has to do with Duluth, and of course, Babbitt, which famously is supposedly Duluth. In fact, he calls the city Zenith. And so, my favorite anecdote about that is I think it was an NBC or ABC or CBS series on the great American novels, they went to Duluth to do the book Babbitt, and Pat Hingle was doing the narration for that, the actor Pat Hingle, and at the end of that, the city of Duluth was going to give a big banquet to the cast and crew. And what happened there was an embarrassment to the city, because Pat Hingle gave the Babbitt speech to the Zenith Real Estate Board, which is it was a kind of thing you could almost hear today coming from extreme right-wing politicians. And he gave this, just read from the book, and the people in attendance there gave him a standing ovation and cheered, and Hingle was kind of, I think, taken back. He thought, you know, these people believe this, that is a speech from me rather than the novel.
Right.
And it was kind of an embarrassment at the time, and I remember people in Duluth, city officials, didn't want that show to air, and of course that caused more negative attention.
Of course.
So it was a lose-lose thing for them, but kind of funny.
Yeah. So Sinclair Lewis said, more liked it than disliked Bluth. Okay, that's good. Let's talk about your father, your father's side of the family.
All right.
A brush with the underworld here, okay? People of a certain age around here will recall, I think it's 1950s, that decade, the murder disappearance of a guy named Tony DeVito around these parts. Body never found to this day, as I know. Names like Rocky Lupino, Alex DeGood, John Azzoni, they were all involved in this. Suspects in the case. Apparently, DeVito was going to rat them out about a Carolina robbery or something.
Yes.
And so, let's kill Tony. Apparently, they did, but nobody's ever found Tony, even at this late date. Well, Rocky Lupino did some time, even though they couldn't find the body.
They got him for the kidnapping.
They got him for the kidnapping. And Rocco Lupino, his name.
Yes.
And your father had kind of a glancing relationship, and I'm not implying in any way your father. Tell us if you could.
Sure. I had been a member of the volunteer organization that some of the listeners might be familiar with called Amicus, which pairs someone who has never had a involvement with law enforcement with a short-time inmate. The inmate had to have less than a year on his term. And the idea of a judge, the late Neil Riley, who said that he kept seeing too many recidivists, and he wondered what could be done to stop that. And he thought if they had a friend who was not a scofflaw, that they maybe they could help get straightened out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I was given a fellow named Barney, who had done a lot of time for armed robbery. And one time I was visiting Barney in the room, and in comes this guy who knew Barney and hailed him, and this guy was a con. He sat down, and Barney said to me, "That's Rocky Lupino." And I knew the name, Rocky Lupino, of course. And I happened to be visiting with my folks in Duluth, and I mentioned that I'd run into Rocky Lupino in the visiting lounge at Stillwater. And Dad said, "Old man, Pa knew old man Lupino," and then told me the story about the families that may have known each other from Italy. And he said the Lupinos would sometimes visit them in Duluth, and we'd visit them in
the Fitos knew the Lupinos.
Lupinos,
okay.
Yes. And I, you know, and at some point, years later, in fact, it was only about 4 or 5 years ago, somebody sent me an old scrapbook and sent it to me because the name Fido appeared in this scrapbook. Well, paging through it, I don't see anything that I know about. Well, as it turned out, the scrapbook with pictures of my family in it had belonged to Rose Lupino, who was Rocky's sister.
Okay.
And I, you know, I...
Wow.
So that was sort of the story. And you know, as I write about in the book, my dad knew a lot of, or had met a lot of important people in because he was a member of the Duluth Symphony, charter member. So he knew he had met a lot of the opera, Metropolitan Opera greats and things. And he just kind of passed all of that off. But the only sort of celebrity that he ever elaborated on was Rocky Lupino.
No guilt by association.
No, I hope not.
All right. Well, let's move on to something that you yourself almost single-handedly helped bring about. Mm-hmm. It seems that for many, many decades, the city of Duluth had a case of self-imposed willful amnesia when it came to a horrible story that happened in June of 1920. Three black men working with a circus that had come to
John
town
Robinson
were
circus.
Falsely accused of raping a white woman. She accused them. They were duly arrested, thrown in the police station, which still stands on Superior Street. A mob formed, over 1,000.
Well, actually, the estimation at the time was between 5 and 10,000.
That big.
It was that large.
And short story, they broke in and pushed the cops aside. The cops did not use firearms, and so the mob got the three guys out of their cells, took them about a block away.
A block up the hill.
And hanged them from a lamppost. And there was cheering going on in the crowd, too, and smiles and photography. and a horrid, and an episode you think would be forever a stain on the city, would be remembered, you know, not gladly, but certainly remembered and talked about. It was erased. Nobody
absolutely
acknowledged
erased
it. Even city libraries threw out files, any clippings, any reference was expunged from the record until you, Michael Fido, came along. It took a lot of hard work to do this and a lot of rebuffs, shall we say. But tell us.
Well, you know, I never set out to write that book to begin with. At the time, thought that I had the potential to become a novelist. And I was for some reason, which I no longer remember, because we're going back to 1970, 72, somewhere in there now. I wanted to include, I knew that this had happened, because when I was about 9 or 10 years old, my mother had mentioned it. I no longer have a context why she would have brought it up to me, but she did. And so I knew that this had happened. And I thought, you know, this might make an interesting chapter in this novel, only a chapter in a work of fiction. But I wanted to get the facts right before I, even though it was fiction, I wasn't going to fabricate things. So I began to look for what I thought was the book. Somebody must have written a book about this 50 years ago. I first in Duluth looking around, and no, nobody knew that. Well, I thought that the city itself wouldn't have wanted anybody. So I looked elsewhere. I looked in books in print, a large volume, nothing about it. And finally, somebody from the State Historical Society said that, well, you know, we got a pamphlet here on this. And so I went down and looked at that. And then I began poring over old newspaper accounts and microfilming and actual the old actual paper themselves, which hadn't been put on microfilm yet. And I went down there for maybe 2 or 3 Saturdays, and I filled a spiral notebook with notes about this. And I sort of had an epiphany then that, you know, this is the forget the novel. I should document this. And so that's what I set out to do. And not knowing that it was going to be upsetting to a large number of people. And
50-some years after the fact.
Yeah, 50-some years after the fact. There was nothing really in Duluth indicating that this had ever happened. And it was kind of a collective amnesia that, you know, people wanted to move on and forget about this. And
even professionals, teachers, educators.
Well, people didn't know. I mean, after a generation.
Or they didn't want to know.
They didn't know or didn't want to know, and a lot of them, I believe, did not know, had no idea.
Right.
And I think there are probably still people in Duluth who still don't know, never heard of this incident. Well, it became important to me because talking to a lot of the elderly, when I was doing some interviews, talking to a lot of the elderly black folks who were in Duluth at the time, they said that until this happened, they had never felt racially singled out for anything, that you know, they don't know that white folks welcomed them or liked them, but there was no hostility or open hostility. And that all changed after this incident. And the lesson, the thing for me that I have subsequently learned, is that that racism in northern Minnesota, such as it existed and perhaps in some cases still may exist, was born of a lie. The white woman was not raped by these men, or indeed by anybody else, but that if racism can be fostered and nurtured by a lie, it can be cleared away when the truth is known.
And you did that. You did that. Took a while to get published, though, didn't it?
It did, indeed.
In fact, the first effort carried a title I'm not going to use on the air here. It's not of your choosing. It is an accurate quote, though.
Yes.
And it is so palpably and so ugly, and it's racism, we won't use it. But it went nowhere. The book just didn't get any push. There was no promotion behind it. People didn't want to be seen buying it, probably, with a title like that.
Right.
But ultimately, the Minnesota Historical Society Press published you.
Yes, they came back and did another version of it, a very handsome version. I was very pleased with what they did.
And it's titled
The Lynchings in Duluth. Prosaic title, but
It's still in print.
It is still in print.
You can get it. And again, these three men were innocent, even by the alleged victim's own say-so, that she had made up the story. And these men had been executed by a mob, for something they had not done. There is a memorial to them.
A very nice one.
Right near the lamppost where they were hanged.
In Duluth, yes. It's on the corner of 1st Street and 2nd Avenue East. And it really is a beautiful work.
The city has officially acknowledged that
and apologized.
And apologized, as it should have. All right, let's just shift into something of a more positive vein. We needed to cover that dark, dark episode. And all of our thanks to you for having unearthed that and getting the story as it really happened on the record. Michael Fido, thank you. Everybody owes you a lot for that one.
Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, we have so many things here. Your book is so rich in stories and all the rest here. I remember covering a political convention for KSDP in Duluth back in the 70s. And we had a break in the action, and we went over to a place called The Flame, which is a restaurant right on the waterfront there, near where the deck is now in the aquarium.
It was certainly the premier restaurant in
town.
And
you were a budding entertainer. You were a singer, you and a buddy of yours, kind of a folk group.
Two guys.
And that guy who ran The Flame, what a nasty guy he was,
pretty crabby.
Well, tell us about him. I was going to call him a jerk. I shouldn't do that. But you'd call him a jerk if you knew what he did, but go ahead.
Well, he had fired his piano player on a Monday night. And they needed a fill-in for the rest of the week. And so his major domo there, Charlie Kazmer, called and said that he heard that I was with a group that could we work the rest of the week. And we said certainly we'd try to do that, so my partner and I went to the Flame and went into audition for Jimmy Orrick, who was the owner, and he immediately left the room.
The minute you started auditioning, he left.
And we finished the tune we were going to do for him and then packed up our gear and then he came back in. We thought, this is going to go nowhere, and he said, be here at 7 o'clock. And so we were, and we worked, and I think that night he may have come down into the lounge where we were working and looked, or wasn't much of a crowd, and he said, we're not making a dime here, and growled at, and out he went. And in any case, by the end of the week, we were standing room only in that room.
So you were bringing him in.
We were bringing him in. And he was gone before we finished. His assistant gave us a check, and years later, as the restaurant was going through hard times, a bunch of a businessman in town gave him money so he could keep the thing going. And then one of them, a fellow I knew, who said, I called and wanted a table, and he said, we're all filled up. And the guy
gave him $5,000 and he wouldn't give him a table. He went out of business and good riddance, huh?
He did.
It was kind of a nice restaurant.
It was.
There. When a ship would go by under the bridge, the aerial bridge, and into the harbor, I think they'd ring a bell in the restaurant and give you the name of the ship, what it was carrying, the cargo, where it was from. So indeed, it was kind of charming.
It was.
Such a jerk running the place.
Exactly.
Michael Fido, how much time do we have left there, Kyle, before we have to get off?
A little over a minute.
Okay, just in the minute we have left. What should we know? What's the best part of Duluth? What's the best part?
I think the best part is, of course, there are two best parts. The physical location of the place.
Absolutely.
And they've got wonderful people there. I'm thinking mostly here of the people who are on the committee to put up that monument.
Yes, yes.
Great folks.
Good town, good people. What more could you ask? Huh?
Indeed.
Except for less severe winters. But we could say that down here, too, couldn't we?
This year, yes.
Michael Fido, author of Zenith City, Stories from Duluth. A wonderful read. Pick it up. University of Minnesota Press. You'll love it. Great storytelling. Thank you, Michael.
Oh, you're welcome.
A pleasure
thank you.
To meet you, my man.
Thank
I've
you.
I've enjoyed your writing for years. Stan Turner here. Have a great weekend. Great week ahead. We'll see you at noon for the All Request and Dedication program right here on KLBB. Come Monday noon. Bye-bye.